And a one.
And a two. And welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 27, Top 5 Villains. I am Chris Mosby.
I'm Caleb Gerard. So I don't know what I sound like. Okay.
Hey, you don't sound too bad.
Okay, good. Okay.
And I'm Murray Fox.
Yeah.
The energy level is outstanding today.
Yeah, I woke up with one of those wonderful migraines, and luckily it's gone now. So I'm kind of a little shaky myself. And Caleb, I know, has been fighting a nasty crap for a week there. So
yep,
we will try to get a little bit more enthusiastic as the episode goes on.
Well, let me go sniff some coke, and I'll be just fine.
Oh, okay. There you go. All
right.
Let's see. Let's cover, before we get into our top five villains here, let's cover a little bit of the news that's happening out there in the wonderful comic book world. First of all, we will get to, as soon as I find the page that I pulled up, there we go. DC shuffled a bunch of people again. I believe we talked about the writer shuffling previous episodes. If not, then, well, Google that, and you get that. But anyway, looks like this is what we got here. Then the beat, the comics beat, kind of summarizes a little bit easier to figure out. So basically, Steve Pugh, I believe that's how you say it, will be taking over the art duties on Animal Man. Some were glad to hear that. I don't really know that guy, but he's apparently pretty good. So then that makes Travel Foreman off of Animal Man, which they announced that first, and that kind of bothered some people. And he will be moving to Birds of Prey, which, you know, I didn't care for his work in Animal Man. That's one of the reasons why I didn't read the book, besides the content. But then I remembered that he will be working on Birds of Prey with the guy's name that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. Swiecherinski, I think. Yeah, see, I did it. That's terrible. Anyway.
I mean, good job.
Yeah, but anyway, and then I remembered that they worked together on Iron Fist. The Immortal Iron Fist series that was canceled, I think probably because I liked it. And they did a pretty good job there, and it seems a little different. So, you know, that should be good. So with him off that, Jesus Saiz will be off of Birds of Prey, moving over to Resurrection Man with issue number 9, which apparently, according to this article, was right in time for a Suicide Squad crossover. So the guy on Resurrection Man is where is it? Fernando Dajingo. He's the artist. He will take over Suicide Squad. I believe it was Murray that said on our Facebook page that they've been having kind of rotating artists on there, so they will have a actual official artist on there. So, yeah, that's quite convoluted.
Can I just take a sidebar or whatever?
Sure. Go ahead.
I think that having Suicide Squad meet up with Resurrection Man is probably one of the most clever crossovers that they could possibly have done.
Yeah, they mentioned that a little bit in here too.
I think that's incredibly clever, because I'll tell you, Resurrection Man, it's going to need the sales boost, because I see it on the next 6 or 8 that may that may get the axe, but Suicide Squad seems to be holding its own, so a little bump from that couldn't hurt. Plus, come on, Suicide Squad versus a guy who can't die, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he can't die for long.
Yeah, he temporarily dies.
Yes. So, and yeah, they kind of hint, say that's kind of the same thing on there, that would probably be a good idea. So, yeah, okay. And this is Odd Man Out, and all this is Suicide Squad, previous Suicide Squad artist Pedrico Delicio. According to DC's website, issues 6 and 7 had fill-in artists, with Delicio back on 8. No word on what he is doing at this point. No, I didn't realize somebody ended up without a job there. You know, his book, other books. So yeah, that was a big confusing thing because they only told a little bit of tidbits at a time when we first, you know, were doing that. So and I guess Trevor Foreman actually wanted to leave. He wanted to do something else, but that was the only thing they were going to let him do at the time. So it was a good thing for him at least. And yeah, so all that shuffling around. There you go.
I really like how they dole out the information bit by bit.
Yeah. Well, they had to fill the blog for that day. They didn't have much else.
They keep you coming back every hour.
Yeah. And see, we also got some first look at some covers. A variant cover for Earth 2 number 1, which shows Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, which some are thinking might be Connor, Dick Grayson, and maybe Donna, due to different things, because Batman's like using the Eskrima sticks that Nightwing does and things like that. And we got the Power Girl and Huntress cover with George Perez, World's Finest number 1 cover, which I thought was interesting. George Perez commented on his fan page that he had absolutely nothing to do with the design of those costumes. And that's almost a verbatim quote, which to me, when you say it like that, that means I don't like it.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
that was just my take, you know?
Yeah, it could be taken that way, I guess.
But it also, I think people were already making comments on it. So maybe he was getting heat for it. And it, you know, he was saying, "Hey, I didn't do that. I'm just drawing what they told me to." So, I mean, there's that. Yeah, here it is. I just wanted. Oh, yeah, it says with all the color cover. Yeah, hey all, with the color cover, World's Finest finally released in solicitations. I just wanted to say something that I've already stated and replied to another post. I had nothing to do with the designs of any of the costumes here, with the exception of some minor tweaks to the scenes in Power Girl's costume. So,
it's not one of his better drawings, I have to say. At least,
yeah,
not
this time. To tell you the truth, I didn't. It took me until he said that. I was like, wait a minute, that was Perez. So, and it also says here, also the color shown is not the final version, since there are some corrections that need to be made before the book's actual publication. So,
a boob window. Come on.
boob window. I tell you. I didn't recognize it was him at first. And I kind of think, well, you know, with the pee on her outfit, I mean, I think the letter P on her outfit instead of an S makes me think that, you know, since they're in this alternate universe, they realize they can't keep their identities because, you know, they're on a universe where those people exist already. But hey, you know, whatever.
Well, I, you know, and we'll get a timeline as this thing progresses. But right. That the Supergirl character is really new to this new DC universe, so that seems a little odd that
yeah.
She would be concerned about that. Though I don't know when Supergirl is set, since I don't actually read that book. I don't know if it's
in current. She just crossed over in Superboy. I just read Superboy number 6, and they went toe to toe. And she was, you know, saw he had the House of El symbol, and she still can't speak anything but Kryptonian, apparently. So I don't read the book either, but that's just – I know they interacted, and it was pretty much the same. I actually ended up with a copy of number 2, and that was made me – you know, so it's still kind of status quo with her not really knowing what the hell's going on.
And Levitt, but Levitt will be strong enough to give us a reason why.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I think it's a clever idea. I'll be honest with you. When I first saw the cover, I thought this is a great idea that they have secret identities for their secret identities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Which he'd already established in the Huntress.
Yeah, he had.
That he's doing it with Karen Starr as well is cool.
Yeah. So, and then let's see, what was the other artist switches? Oh, yes, the Walking Dead deal. It was earlier this week. Tony Moore, which was on the first 6 issues of the Walking Dead comic book, has decided that he was going to file suit that he was coerced into fraudulently signing away his rights on Walking Dead TV show in exchange for a piece of the publishing of several other series, and he has not been able to audit, blah, 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 blah. I won't get into too much in it. Kirkman has since then said the lawsuit is ridiculous. Says 7 years ago we both had representation, and he's violating the same contract he initiated and approved and wants to misrepresent the fees he was paid, blah, 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 blah. That's not good. From what I've read, those two guys were childhood friends. So that's that kind of thing never ends well. So how long did it take Gaiman and McFarlane to work out their crap over that Angelina character or whatever?
They just did. So it's
been what, 10, 15 years, something like that?
Yeah.
And it shows a cover of one of the inside cover. I mean, you've seen this a lot, of one of the first the issues he was on, and it clearly says, you know, Robert Kirkman, creator, writer, letterer, and Tony Moore, penciler, inker, gray tones. It doesn't say creator on there. So, I mean, there you go. And, I mean, he was only on six issues. The other guy, he's actually credited in the Walking Dead TV show credits. He's been there ever since. And I actually like that other guy's better.
Are they not both credited?
I don't think so. Not on the TV show.
I think Tony does. I thought Tony Moore got. I thought I'd seen his name in the opening credits. So we will be able to find out in approximately 10 hours here.
Yes, exactly. I don't remember seeing Tony Moore's on there, but I do remember the Aldred guy. So, but you know, like you said, we'll find out for sure. And the one that has really got a lot of people upset about is I'll just read this snippet off of Comic Book Resource. This week, the latest judgments were made in a long-running legal battle between Ghost Rider creator Gary Friedrich, I believe that's how you say it, and Marvel Characters, Inc., and by extension, the latest victory of a comics company over a disaffected freelancer was also handed down. Blogger Daniel Beast, who has followed the comic book, the Ghost Rider case closely, posted a copy of the court documents. Blah, blah, blah. Basically, what you got down is the last round of this thing. Yeah, in brief, the agreement lay out that Marvel will drop its countersuit if Friedrich agrees to pay $17,000 in damages. And this also one of the things they got onto him for. He's like doing sketches and stuff of Ghost Rider, and that's why they're wanting him to pay the fees, if I understood it correctly, which that hurts a lot of other people at Artist Alley and you know.
Is it sketches, though, or is it prints? Like, I think.
Let's see.
I don't think he's an artist, is he? I don't know Ghost Rider all that well, but I think
he's a writer. He was a writer.
Yeah, he is a writer.
So I think the issue is that he's got prints of a particular artist or that he would then sign and sell. And
And Cease is not only selling Ghost Rider related items of his own creation, but also promoting himself as the creator of the character for financial gain. Marvel did note Friedrich's right to sell his autograph on Ghost Rider merchandise, but only officially created her. But that has bigger implications for artists, too, that do that very same thing. So, and the bad part of it is, and there's been another thing on Mark Evaner's site, and in fact,
Steve Niles.
Steve Niles has created a page for him, but apparently, you know, this guy is broke. He's got a lot of bills, and they want $17,000 for him, and he doesn't have it. So there's a site on steveniles.com, a donation button for him to help pay for his bills. And that's a sad thing. I know some people was a boycott of Marvel being talked about.
The world comes out of this looking good. Like, even if they're protecting their intellectual property or whatever, there's just no way they can spin it so that they look
good. A lot of people are trying to get them to get rid of that, bill. And they probably wouldn't even be fighting hard for it if they didn't have a new movie coming out. Which, you know, the last one was so good. Well, any part without Eva Mendes was fine, I thought. You know, it's funny, that was, I had actually got contacted by whoever did the, I had been doing my comic book blog very long, and I actually got a bunch of Ghost Rider merchandise to, you know, give away on the site and do a, you know, if I did a review on that. And I did a review, a very honest review of that movie, and I never got contacted by anybody ever again after that. I still got some shirts and some biker wallets with chains around here somewhere. Oh, and some temporary tattoos, I think, in a box. But anyway.
Nice.
So, yeah, that doesn't look good to any, you know, that nobody wins, like you said. Yeah. But anyway, that's bad stuff. I don't know. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? The boycott of Marvel do us any good? Because I'm only buying two of their books anyway, so.
I'm not going to stop buying Daredevil, and I sure, I'll go ahead and boycott Ghost Rider. I'm good with that.
I haven't read any Ghost Rider stuff in years. I actually did.
No. You're making a conscious decision not to read or buy Ghost Rider.
Come on. Okay. All right.
Or go to the movie. You're not going to go to the movie either, okay?
Probably not anyway. Considering,
okay,
all right, I got
it. It's much higher moral stance if you say, oh yeah.
But anyway, yeah, in the Mark Evaner's thing, he says that he's like a recovering alcoholic and medical problems have severely limited his abilities to write or do any kind of decent paying work. So yeah, it's bad news all the way around.
I get the idea about boycotts and stuff. I don't know if they.
Not when you're talking about somebody that big, you know? And really, to get right down to it, I don't know if that's still the case. At one point, they almost went out of, you know, out of business or went bankrupt. And if it wasn't for the movie stuff, good or bad, they, you know, they wouldn't be even still going, so.
Yeah, I would almost rather see people at cons kind of. Mm-hmm. Direct questions at Marvel panels, you know, like that sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
Embarrassing people tends to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bring attention to it.
People at the panels have been, I mean, if you're, you know, like, I mean, the panel people don't, they're not controlling the Marvel shit. They don't get the, you know, like it's not their choice to be doing whatever, but still.
Right.
A little public shaming is never a bad thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's not like Quesada sat down and said, hey, let's, you know, let's go ahead and BF this guy. Now, this was Disney lawyers or whatever.
Yeah, so, exactly.
However, you get enough bad press, and eventually, maybe.
Yeah. Has it hit CNN, this story? I have no idea.
I don't think so. Well, it's on Hollywood Reporters where I first saw it. No way.
Well, then the general public doesn't give a shit. So.
No, that was Hollywood Reporter was the wanted Walking Dead thing. They probably have that on. National news more than they do this thing. So
yeah.
I don't know if they do yet, though. Like, every article I read about that Walking Dead stuff is quoting the same, like, it's the same information.
Yeah, yeah.
Packaged different ways. So yeah, there's very little information about it.
Yeah. I actually saw the one of the sites, I don't know where, had, like, photocopies of the actual suit that you could look at, you know, gifs of or whatever. So, I mean, that's the only thing really out there. It's probably a while before we know all of it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I would totally be on board the Blame Kirkman train, but at this point we don't have enough.
Yeah.
We just don't have enough.
The fact that, I mean, those issues, that picture of one of those first issues showing right there, he's a creator, and he's the other guy's just the artist, and it, I mean, that's one thing, but we don't really have any idea what happened between them, so it's going to be a he said, she said, unless somebody can come up with some documentation to show something one way or the other. So, yeah, that just makes me sad. It really does.
You need a moment to collect yourself?
No, I'm okay. I'm all right. But anyway, let's get into it.
Hey, real yes. quick. Well, maybe not so quick.
Go ahead.
The letter from Robin. We got a chance to.
Yes, go for it.
Okay, so our frequent correspondent Robin Bunting sent us a letter about 2 weeks ago. Hey guys, straight to the point. I was listening to episode 25 the other day and got to thinking. You're often referencing the point that all three of you live in different parts of the country, and one even as exotic as Canada.
Totally exotic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hold on. And real quick, Robin, Canada, different country. Just FYI. Okay.
Of course it is. He was probably thinking Canada, Britain, we're connected, you know, like we're all part of this.
Oh.
Well.
The whole Queen thing. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, I forgot about
that. And I don't mean Freddie Mercury. Okay.
Another podcast.
You've explained to us all how you got into comics, but what I'm wondering, how do you know each other? How did you meet and how long have you been friends? Well, first of all, we're not friends. We actually hate each other.
I wondered if he was going to say anything about that.
No. We're all Legion fans. We met through the Legion of Substitute Podcasters podcast. Mm-hmm. We were all posting on their board and their Facebook page, and Chris and Murray have been infrequent guests on their show. So it's that is our shared origin.
Yeah, story. We had Paul French on a while back, if you remember, and. He's the one that got together with Darren to do that podcast, and you know that's a really great podcast, and you know that came out of the Comic Geek Speak podcast, which is well in 1,000 episodes, way past that. So you know they're like the father podcast, and Comic Geek Speak is the granddaddy podcast. So that's kind of how it ended up that we all those people from the Legion podcast were. All fans of that, and they kind of got together the same way we did, you know, just from that podcast. So, and a lot of actual podcasts have sprung out from that podcast, the Comic Geek Speak one. So,
yeah, and actually, the Legion one is, I mean, we're probably the second one to spawn out of the Legion one. I think there's fourth or a fifth one that of people from
Doom Patrol one.
Yeah, the Doom Patrol, Murray.
Murray is on. Or I think you guys are still doing that, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's a Superman one that kind of spun out of it, and there's a new Doctor Who one that's coming out of it.
That's right, the Superman one.
That's how.
But I haven't listened to it yet. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. So that's how we met. So now to comics. Looking back on 2011, it's hard not to place Scott Snyder as the standout talent of the year. Agreed. But I've recently finished the Dark Angel saga of Uncanny X-Force, and it was excellent. I agree. I'm probably the only one reading that, right?
I haven't read it. I haven't read any X-Men stuff in years.
Yeah, well, it is Robin, I think we're both in agreement that that was a great storyline, and it's spawning a lot of new storylines in the other X books, which is really cool. Especially in Wolverine and the X-Men. We've got Warren popping up over there as the Naked Angel. I also read Venom week in and week out, and with Punisher, and I have placed
Punisher's I have good. Placed
these three as by far my favorite Marvel books of 2011. Do any of you read these books? And am I alone thinking that Rick Remender writing two of my favorite three may be Marvel's best talent and underappreciated, by the way. You read Punisher, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, Greg Rucker does that. Yeah, it's good. It's a slow burn. Not as much action as I've seen in the past, but these actually being more realistic, and the Punisher got severely injured, and in between issues there was like 100 days where he didn't do anything because he was so injured from stuff that happened in one of the books. So, I mean, that's kind of cool. So,
yeah. So, let me see. By the way, you should be reading Daredevil, Robin. Daredevil.
Yes, Daredevil. Must pick up Daredevil. I think the trade's coming out soon. You can get those first six issues. That's great stuff. Great stuff.
Let's see, I've had a horrible head cold. Can commiserate. This week, so I've had a couple of sick days. Also can commiserate. And with nothing to do but lay in bed, I had absolutely devoured my backlog of comics. I caught up on most of my monthly DC and Marvel books, as well as Jennifer Blood, Star Trek, and the new Transformers. Star Trek and Jennifer Blood are really good. I'm undecided about the two new Transformers yet, but my girlfriend likes them, so that means I keep buying them for now. Are you guys reading any of these from the smaller companies that's...
I have read, I've been buying from Comicology when I can afford it, the ongoing Star Trek series, and it started out taking the setting of the new universe that was established in the movie and redoing plots from the old show, and that was kind of interesting. I hear that they're starting an actual brand new storyline involving stuff that happened in the movie, so that should be good. And from I also heard that I think it's going to lead up to stuff that happened in the it's going to happen in a new movie, which is being filmed as we speak. So that I have read and actually enjoyed that. I haven't read it the last couple of issues though. I'm trying to wait till they get a little cheaper. I have a thing about $4 comics.
The only IDW I'm looking at is the Infestation stuff, and I haven't picked up Infestation 2 after my my recommendation from a few weeks ago, and I have not followed up on my own advice. So
I actually bought those on Comicology, but I haven't read that. I bought the main series of the Star Trek one, and I think I accidentally bought like a G.I. Joe number one or whatever, but I haven't read them yet. I was meaning to do that.
I saw that Danger Girl is going to cross over into it, so I'm actually very interested because of that.
That should be interesting.
Let me see. And Murray, you're not. The only IDW you're getting is the Cold War, right?
Cold War, and then the Next Men after. Mm-hmm.
How is Next Men? I haven't picked up the new ones. Are they good?
I like any of the new ones or the latest.
The latest, last couple months. I haven't read the. I haven't picked up a new Next Man book in probably a year or so.
So they did like the 10, it was like a 10 issue, I guess miniseries, that continued from the old series of 15 years ago. And it was good. It was lots of time travel and brain busting in the, this happened. Nope. Now this happened. Oh, we've switched it. Now this. So lots of time jumping and rewriting of the timeline, which still isn't quite done. Like it's they were leading to a point of. Well, I won't spoil it. They were leading to a point. They got to that point. The series ended, and Byrne took a bit of a break, and now he's back with Aftermath, and is continuing with the time jumps and stuff. So you're. It's good, but you never know where you're at in the series. Like, you never quite know whether you're never sure what's going on and where it's all leading. I think once it's all finished and it's one complete story, it'll all hang together, I think. But at the moment, I every issue I read, I'm like, wow, now what? Oh my gosh, I get confused quite easily. But I'm enjoying it. Like, it's a great run. It's a good run.
Is it still the same six Next Men from the old days?
Yes.
Okay.
The ones that survive are in the book.
Oh, right. Fair enough. Okay.
One that survive. Okay.
And I think
he's not. It's not a new story. He's not introducing new. Well, I mean, he's introducing new characters, but the characters that you read about 15 years ago are mostly still around.
Okay. Hey, you're pixelating or something, Murray.
Yeah, you're very scratchy.
Oh, I'm not sure. Is that any better?
Nope.
Huh.
Oh, wait.
That was good.
Yeah. Yeah, you're clear as a bell now.
Okay.
You just got to keep that arm stuck up in the air. You'll be fine.
Excellent. Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, wow, you sound really clear now. Okay.
You're like right in the country next door. Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
Oh, wait.
There he went again. Okay. Well
anyway, we'll just continue.
And you're reading Buffy, right, Chris?
season 9. No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, word is that Buffy is a good one to pick up. So if you were a vampire Buffy fan,
My thing with that was I got the whole season 8 because I, you know, wife and I are a big Buffy fan, and I, you know, so they got the season 8 and it was great. And then he was letting other people write it, and Brad Metzler got a hold of it, and it's like, oh my god, what the hell's going on? And it just went downhill, and it was just like, oh my god, it was terrible at the end. Even Whedon apologized for it. That's how bad it was. And so when the season 9 came out, I just didn't want to have anything to do with it. So, okay. But I've heard it's good, so I might, I don't know, get a trade or, you know, something. And then the big controversy with that is that, spoilers, right, let it pause, let everybody, you know, has been in the news that, she apparently got pregnant and is going to have an abortion. So.
Whoa, all right. Let me see. This is also giving me the chance to read a lot of my Volume 1 trades that I've been picking up as tasters, for ongoing or old stories, for which I was late to the party. As I said before, I only started reading comics about 2 years ago, and there's so much good stuff to catch up on. As this email is getting long already, I'll do this as briefly as possible. Didn't love it, so I won't continue to buy it, which is Spawn and Chew. He thought they were okay, but not enough to bring him back for seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Get it, shoot, seconds.
Picking up, because, you know, it's funny you should mention that, because I read Spawn when it first came out, and I think I had it up like in the 20s and or whatever, and you know, ended up selling them. And then I've been picking up those origin trades, and that stuff is deeply ensconced in the 90s, so yeah, that's going to be hard to read. If you didn't read that when it came out, you know, into it in the 90s, yeah, you're not going to like that. So I'm not surprised.
Let me see. So definitely continue reading Criminal, which I have never read.
Yeah, I want to get that too.
100 Bullets, which I tried and did not get into. So, keep us updated, Robin. Cause
yeah, I've heard of the concept of that, but I've never read it.
Anyway. And then one of yours, Murray Sweet Tooth. Thank you, Murray, for the recommendation. What an excellent read. I want more now, with an exclamation. So.
It is a good read for sure.
Right. And then DCU presents Dead Man. Enjoyed it, but definitely was a miniseries. I wouldn't have continued it as an ongoing. Bring on the Challengers. Yes, agreed. Nearly forgot. The Walking Dead Volume 15 was excellent as always. Rick has to be one of my favorite characters in comics. When the shit hits the fan, I never know how he will react. It varies so much, but no matter what, I always think it's the right decision, so I enjoy the ride a lot. Can't wait for the next 2 volumes to hit issue 100.
Yes, after I got read my 7th hardcover, I started picking that up on Comicology every month, and yeah, it's something big's coming. Should be good.
All right, I'm up to issue 11, not issue 11.
So, does it look better in color, or is it still good? I liked it in black and white. I haven't looked at any of the color issues, so I'm just
curious. There isn't any color issues.
I thought he went back and they were recoloring. They colored the as a new series. No.
No. Uh-uh.
You know what?
They did the weekly. They started reprinting them weekly, but they've never colored them, as far as I know.
Okay. You know what? I'm sorry. I was thinking of Battle Pope. Sorry.
Okay.
Different Kirkman. Okay.
And he said, sorry for the long email, but you don't have to be sorry for the long email. It's weird. We really enjoy hearing from you, so, or anybody else that would like to email us. It's great fun. So.
Yeah. Email us, you bastards. All right. So, Robin, thank you.
Yeah, we greatly appreciate that.
And by the way, smart move to continue buying the book that the girlfriend likes.
He's smart. He's smart beyond his years, isn't he?
Smart for an English person. Okay, sorry.
No, just kidding.
Sorry, I've been watching too much Downton Abbey. So.
Ah, I see. Okay. So.
That's Robin's email. I figured we should get to that. Well, I think we can probably get through these 15 characters pretty quick. So.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Especially with Murray pixelating.
No. He sounded okay. All right, who wants to go first?
Oh, you pardon. Do.
All right, I'll do it first. Good, because I'm – I am going to enjoy talking about this character. Okay, we're doing our top. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say. I was going to say what you were going to say. Go ahead.
Top five villains, and comic book villains, I assume, which I did cheat on one, but we'll get to that later. Okay, this is one from the original Nightwing series when Dixon and McDaniel were doing it, and it has to be one of the most unique characters out there. And the character's name is Torque. And I shall read a snippet from the Nightwing Secret Files and Origins number one about this character. Real name is Dudley Soames. Inspector Dudley, quote-unquote, Deadly Soames, was the dirtiest cop in a city where you couldn't throw a rock without hitting an officer on the take. Member of various police forces, the Londonbury-born Soames found his niche in Bloodhaven, where he played – this was before it was destroyed, everybody. You know, this is old universe. When he played both sides of the legal force, feeding information on Ronald Desmond's criminal activities to Nightwing while serving at the self-same Blockbuster as one of his mob lieutenants. Now, people that don't know Blockbuster, big, huge, massive Hulk-type character, but this time around he's actually incredibly intelligent criminal mastermind. So anyway, realizing that Soames would be his undoing, Blockbuster twisted the inspector's head and neck around 180 degrees. But Soames didn't die. Rehabilitated with radical drug therapy by Dr. Sander Pavar, Soames beat paralysis and learned to walk again despite his physical deformity. Morbidly dubbing himself Torque, Soames strangled Pavar and launched a bloody campaign to exact revenge on Blockbuster. Oh yeah, he wears specialized glasses with rear view mirrors affixed to the frames in order to see where he's going or who he's killing. So if you can just imagine that, the guy's got his head turned completely around, he's looking behind him, but you know, he's got his favorite weapon is a Tommy gun, 45 caliber machine gun that they used to use back in old gangster days. So yeah. That's my first one.
I have never heard of him. Wow.
Yeah, it was just pretty much in the just in Nightwing, and it's one of the ones they created for him, and he was around for quite a while.
His design was cool. I remember him because I actually read early issues of Nightwing myself. Mm-hmm. That he did have the shoulder pads, if I remember correctly. But
yeah, I think he did a little. It was part of the way. Well, I think it had to do with the way his head was turned around a little bit. And believe it or not, that character is actually in the DK published DC Comics Encyclopedia, both versions. You can see a picture of him in there.
That's cool. That sounds like a totally Gotham villain.
Oh yeah, I loved it when it first was like that is because and they played it out a little bit of it and then they did a slow burn on it because they showed him, you know, getting taken by the doctor and you know he's laying there and his head's down and he's like drooling or whatever and they just like show a couple of panels and then eventually you know he was completely healed and when he was then he killed the doctor that did it because you know how would you want to live with your head turned around like that, you know? So huh. Yeah. That was it was an interesting character. He would leave palindromes on his victims, and that's how Nightwing, you know, eventually figured out who it was. So anyway, it was good stuff.
Cool.
That's my first one.
Good choice.
All righty. I'm gonna go with. Let me see. I'm gonna go with the composite Superman.
Oh, that's a good one.
Uh-huh. I remember. Grabbing back when DC did those Blue Ribbon Digests, there was a World's Finest Digest, and the first story was a reprint of – I think it was a reprint of the Composite Superman's first appearance.
I believe – yeah, I have those issues actually. World's Finest with those two issues with him in it, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's his first appearance. And then when I found back issue bins, one of the series that I gravitated to was Super Team Family, and one of the first issues I got there was the sixth issue of Super Team Family, which had the second issue of the Composite Superman. And he's just such a cool character. Like, visually, he's he's so wacky with the half Superman, half Batman suit split down the middle and green skin and all the powers of the Legion of Superheroes. I mean, yes. How could you go wrong with that? That's just awesome.
Let's see. If I remember correctly, he was a janitor in a Superman museum.
Yes.
And Superman had all those little figurines of the Legionnaires, and he stood in front of it.
Yes.
And got hit.
Lightning.
Lightning hit it and transferred the powers to him and made him look like that. Yes, first appearance is in, according to comicbookdb.com, 1941 in World's Finest Comics, number 142. Oh, I don't have that particular one. Yeah. Oh, that's right, 1964. Right, exactly. I was looking at the date of World's Finest Comics. But yeah, I think I do have those, actually.
Yes, they are. Oh, it's good. And what I liked about him is his appearances are pretty limited. Like, you get
a
couple of appearances in World's Finest. He shows up years and years and years later, and I think they give him a new name, Amalgamax or something.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, and he gets some of the new Legionnaires' powers too. But
He was in the 5 year later. No, it was in the SW6 batch. That's what it was.
Really?
Called Biomax. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Bion.
Bion, that's it. Bion. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, no, it was cool. I liked it. I thought he was great. And I liked that most of his important stories are like, there's a beginning, there's an end, you can grab them all in there, and they're fun. Like,
yeah, that's good stuff.
They're fun. You got Superman and Batman and Robin, and they're friendly, and they're duking it out against this crazy, crazy guy.
Yeah, that's good stuff there.
Crazy powerful.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
I love this. I didn't know this about it. Okay, so here's a television appearance by the character. Composite Superman made a cameo in Justice League Unlimited in the episode called The Greatest Story Never Told. By the way, a great episode. Unlike the comic, this composite Superman is the product of a battle with Mordru. It's an actual fusion of Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman with the appearances of the composite Superman, but with Wonder Woman's voice.
Oh, sweet. Oh, I didn't know that either.
That's that great Booster Gold episode. But
I do vaguely remember that.
I love that. With Wonder Woman's voice.
That's awesome.
Thank God, Internet. Thank you, Internet, so
yeah,
much.
That's a choice, man.
Excellent.
All right. So, I'm going Marvel to start with here. I've got two Marvels on my top five, but we're going to start with Dr. Octopus from Spider-Man. Shocking.
I thought about him. Good stuff.
Yeah.
I think so. I love Dr. Octopus. There's some reason whenever there's a Dr. Octopus appearance, I actually enjoy Spider-Man. This is before the current Dr. Octopus too, which he's a real badass super scientist now with his four extra arms, mechanical arms, and his appearance in the Spider-Man 2 movie actually made that a better movie than Spider-Man 1.
That is my favorite of all of them, is that one.
Yeah, Alfred Molina kicked butt.
He did. He really, yeah. I love that movie.
And the concept is so simple. I mean, it's this poor scientist who he uses these – in the original origin too. He's a scientist who uses these arms to help him do extra work around the lab. And due to an accident, which he blames on Spider-Man, of course, these arms get fused to him, and then all of a sudden he can control them too. And he's got eight arms just like an octopus. And it seems like such a goofy concept, but he turned out to be a real badass. And he continued to keep popping up throughout Spider-Man's history throughout the years, and even went so far at one point as to almost marry Aunt May, I think that was right around the Clone Saga, so most people.
I think that might have been in the 70s, because it seems like I remember seeing that, but I could be wrong.
So a great Ditko creation. I'm not usually a fan of Ditko's art, but this has got that goofy, wonky feel that all the early Marvel stuff had. You know, a weird visual. He's bulkier than Spider-Man, so. You know, we finally got to go up against a heavy character as opposed to like the Vulture or Green Goblin, who were always kind of skinny. Octavius, he was never like in shape. He was just a pudgy scientist guy who kick ass with these extra arms. And
see, there you go. Chubby kids had villains they could emulate too.
Plus, he had the Mo Howard haircut and
right.
And those glasses. When you were talking about Torque, I was going to mention it. It seemed like he had the same goggles as Octavius.
Yeah, they do look a lot alike.
Though he didn't have the Mo Howard haircut, I don't think. Torque, I mean. So, so that's one of my favorites. When he pops up, I enjoy the story. And again, right now he is, he's the big bad in the upcoming Spider-Man stories.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So along with the Secret Six, but he's leading them. He is, and he's taken on all the intellectual characters throughout the Marvel Universe. Even even outsmarted Reed Richards.
Oh wow!
Yep, exactly. And Reed Richards is no dummy.
No, he is not.
There you go. That's my number five.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
All righty. Oh, and this one, I tended the ones I did to be around the nasty category. You got? Oh crap. My Firefox just crashed. 1 second.
Oh, Firefox, the new villain.
That's right.
It's a character named Crib from the Sinestro Corps.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that creepy one who... Oh, yeah.
Let me see. Let me get the entry here. Firefox coming back up.
Oh, I forgot all about Sinestro. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not really a villain right now.
Well, no.
But, okay, where'd it go? Okay, here we go. All right. Let's see. Remember the Sinestro Corps, the alien had Crib, K-R-Y-B, which you'll understand that distinction in a minute, as one of the most frightening methods of instilling fear. She targets members of the Green Lantern Corps who are recently married and have had children. She murders the parents and then takes the children and keeping them in a sack-like pouch on her back, which actually is more like a kind of a cage. It's built into her body and it opens up and she puts them in there and you can see them through it. And, you know, they're like, mama. But, yeah.
Creepy.
Creepiest thing I'd ever seen in a comic book in quite a while. But she would take them and I guess keep them in their own and, I'm sure they got him out, some of them, but yeah. She had, according to this, mind-controlling liquids, able to expel liquids that took control of a person who came in contact with them. And yeah, mm-hmm. Yes, very, very fearsome appearance. I think they even made an action figure of it.
Who did the art, Shores? That was in, I want to say that was in Green Lantern Corps. I'm kind of curious who did the art on that.
I think it was Ethan Van Sciver. It did that when the core, the Sinestro Corps, where I was going along.
That was she was made the main Green Lantern was Kyle Rayner versus her, right? Or Rayner or whatever.
It might have been. They were all he was in the Corps in general at that time. So yeah, the Green Lantern Corps book was him. Yeah.
Yeah. She'd go creepy.
Yeah. The first appearance was Green Lantern Sinestro Corps Special Number 1, and the first full appearance was Tales of the Sinestro Corps Superman Prime. Has to be one of the creepiest villains that I have seen in a long time.
Yep.
So, that's my number 2.
Wow. Alrighty. I'm going to go with Savannah. Captain Marvel.
Oh, that's a good
Marvel's
one.
Big bad mad scientist character. Introduced in the very first Captain Marvel story, like way back in Wiz Comics number 1, 19, whatever that was, 40-something, 30-something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know that I have a favorite story for him, but anytime he shows up, like he's just fun. I mean, Captain Marvel stories, period, are fun. And anytime he's going up against Savannah, you can usually count on some fun moments. I love that he's like this crazy inventor and he's got like a bajillion objects and things that he's made. And in one of the stories I read, he's got a room filled with all these failures of his devices and all these terrible inventions that he's made. And they're all things that would improve mankind or help society and So he's going to have nothing to do with them. He just throws them off in a room, and they're like his cast-offs. But, yes, he's always fun.
Now, didn't Ordway make him, like, the surrogate parent for Billy Batson and Mary Batson for in the original – in the
Power of Shazam?
Power of Shazam initially. Weren't they, like, living with him or something?
So. I think so, yeah.
Sort of Cinderella-like.
Yeah, for the beginning – I think that is how they brought Savannah into it in the beginning.
Hmm. Captain Marvel, or excuse me, Shazam, is not one of my characters I'm strong on.
I love his Golden Age stuff. And
yeah, it's
stuff in the 70s I like.
Yeah,
Savannah family. I love the Savannah family.
Yeah, like he's got this whole extended family. He's got like his two ugly children who. Anytime the Marvel family would go up against the Savannah family, it would always be Mary Marvel versus, I think it's Georgina Marvel or Savannah. And
yeah, there was a lot of that.
Yeah, like he had his little ugly children, but then he also had two.
And the hotties. He had Beauty. Yeah,
his wife was gorgeous too, if I remember correctly. Because they were all that was in 52.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so he's got, Butia, and, I can't remember the name of the handsome son. It's something like...
I'm cheating, Magnificus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, was he, like these blonde Adonises in there.
Was he on Oolong Island, Dr. Savannah?
Yeah.
Yes.
He was. He had his whole family there, if I'm not mistaken. That's the first I can recall ever seeing that family was there, and they had the ones that looked like him and the ones that were good looking like the wife, and that was wild stuff, man.
Yeah, you gotta love a supervillain family.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Right.
Well, like that. Yeah, I don't know if anyone else. I'm actually surprised you didn't do Black Adam, but okay. Yeah.
No, Black Adam is he's fine, but he doesn't have the panache that Savannah has.
Yeah, he's kind of a brute, especially if you read that World War III thing.
Panache. Mm-hmm. I've never used the word panache in a sentence, so.
There you go.
Kudos, man. Kudos.
Yeah. Who knew the Canadians were so cultured?
Oh, we're totally cultured. Totally.
No, that's a good choice.
Alrighty.
Okay. So my next one, I'm going back DC, and this is one that you both will appreciate, I'm certain. Deathstroke the Terminator, Slade Wilson, as a bad guy.
All about him. Holy crap.
Yeah.
I almost
picked up. I figured one of you guys would. Yeah. We're not talking about the one in the new universe, though, are we? Okay.
No.
Yeah. Teen Titans. Of course, I could think Brother Blood, and I thought no.
Oh, Brother Blood's one of my alternates. So,
I'd forgotten about Brother Blood. I need to read those Titans again.
So, well, yeah, just pick up Judas Contract, and you get all of them.
Yeah, this is true.
Except for
I've read that so many times.
Except for Trigon.
Yeah.
So, Slade Wilson.
That, but anyway, go ahead.
So Slade Wilson was their first. Villain of sorts, a brand new villain created by George Perez and Marv Wolfman, first appeared in New Teen Titans number 2, the Perez, like I said, the Perez Wolfman edition. Mm-hmm. He is a mercenary who uses 90% of his brain power, as we find out in later stories with him. Mm-hmm. He has one eye, which again we get an origin. We even get an origin behind how he loses his eye, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, that was great.
That was from the Judas Contract as well. And he was just a badass mercenary.
He was just a
villain for hire. When they tried to make him a hero, I thought that was really incredibly stupid. But I think I read one issue of Deathstroke, and that's just because a buddy of mine drew it.
I've got some of those too when they tie it into other stuff. But I think one of the best interpretations scenes of him, of what a wonderful bad guy he is an Infinite Crisis.
So you mean Identity Crisis.
Identity Crisis, that's right, Identity Crisis, yeah. My bad.
He takes out the freaking Justice League.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
Not all the heavy hitters, but still.
No, he takes out Green Lantern.
Yeah, he does. I mean,
this is a guy. His main superpower is he can utilize more of his brain power than other people, and he takes out a freaking Green Lantern and a Flash.
Yeah.
So he is a badass. Mm-hmm. And he should always be a bad guy. I don't, you know, this whole, I haven't read any Deathstrokes beyond number two of the current series, so I don't know if they've gotten over the whole I'm old and I have to prove myself concept, but I hope they have. I hope they've just moved on to he's the best at what he does, and what he does is really bad.
Yeah. Higgins isn't writing that anymore, so I think they're getting a complete new, oh, that's right. That's the one that Liefeld's taken over.
Yes,
completely.
He's going to put him up against Lobo, and God damn it, I have to buy that issue.
Well, you'll have to tell us about it because I ain't buying that one.
God damn it! I
damn you, Liefeld.
It's Lobo. I mean, I'm a Lobo fanatic. I admit it. Mm-hmm. Let me see. So yeah, he was in the definitive Titan storyline. He was the cause for it, the Judas contract with Tara, and even had a Brother Blood, a couple chapters of Brother Blood in there, which was cool.
I was actually reading, because I started reading Teen Titans full-time right when Tara started the team. So I was there for that whole long burn build-up of that. Just awesome stuff.
And he also, he was so big at the time, he was one of the big bads in the X-Men Titans crossover.
Yeah.
That Simonson drew.
Yeah, so that's the one that got me reading both X-Men and Teen Titans, actually, was that book.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I read that first, and then right after I read that, I was so by those two characters, because I was into Legion. That was the only one I was reading regularly, and I had all these back issues and stuff. But yeah, I picked up, as soon as I read that, I went and picked up the very next issue of Teen Titans, New Teen Titans, and the very next issue of Uncanny X-Men, and I read it for years afterwards.
Wow. Good intro, man.
Yeah.
Still, yeah, you...
The copy I got's been read so many times, it's fallen apart. I think I picked up another one years ago.
I've got it boxed, but I have the crossovers collection, the DC Marvel crossover collection, yep, which has it in there.
I remember picking that up at a grocery store in my hometown.
Wow.
Sitting there on the rack. Yep. That's a very vivid memory because that was one of the coolest comic books I'd ever read.
So, it is cool. It is cool.
Even now, I think it's probably one of the top 10 at least. So, anyway, good stuff.
And Murray, you had an opinion on this guy. You were Deathstroke?
Yeah, no, I couldn't believe I'd forgotten all about him. Like, I was going through the Teen Titans villains that I got, like Brother Blood, and I got Trigon, and I was like, oh, who else is there? Deathstroke totally slipped my mind, but his best story totally was the Judas contract, for sure.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome stuff.
And then, then I wonder, like, it's not that they lost their way with him, but when they started to turn him into...
Well, that's because he was so popular. They made him...
Yeah. You get it. Like, they turned him into an anti-hero and gave him his book and stuff, and...
Which I never read, either.
No, I don't know if I read... There was a time there where Titans was crossing over into...
Oh God, the Titans hunt! Don't not stop! Stop now before you.
Yeah, that's when the book really started going downhill.
No! The Titans hunt was great up until
I need to read that stuff again because I at one point I don't remember when it was. I actually stopped reading it, and I ended up filling in getting all of them later on, and I've never read any of them. The ones I picked up. I loved
the Titans hunt up to a point, and then it went off the rails for sure. But even then, I don't know if I bought the... Huh. You know what? I probably did. I must have bought the crossovers into Deathstroke, but I didn't end up ever keeping them.
I think what killed them for me was when they made Jericho bad. I think that's when I stopped reading it.
All right.
The first time.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done. So, next.
Oh, it's my turn again?
Sure.
Okay. Well, this my next one is, and I've said before, I'm not a big fan of having villains have their own book, but this is a special case. My number third one would be the Plutonian, which is the star of the Mark Waid, Peter Krause, well, in this trade anyway, creation for Irredeemable, the Superman analog gone completely bad. When I mean bad, I mean bad. We're talking about, you know, killing women and children, destroying whole islands. There's some weird kinky stuff with an actor that looks like him and a chick that looks like another hero, and he's standing over them and making them do things. Yes, a truly evil, evil, evil human being. 7-8 volumes of evilness. probably one of the most. I mean, we're talking bad stuff here, you know. Bad stuff. Anybody that reads that title knows what I'm talking about. But yeah, not really that much. We've got a Walking Dead season 2 marathon coming up on an AMC here, everybody. Leading up to the premiere, just to let you know. But it'll be completely over with by the time you hear this episode. But anyway, yes. The Plutonian. I think everybody knows the story about this. It was a hero gone bad. And just a little bit from the intro in the beginning. In superhero comics, pretty much everyone who's called upon to put a cape is, at heart, emotionally equipped for the job. I reject that premise. This is Mark Waid saying this. Irredeemable is an idea that I've been kicking around in my head for a long, long time. You saw flashes of it in Kingdom Come and in Empire, but the first was about the ethical price of heroism, and the second was about a world where heroism just flat out didn't exist. Irredeemable is, in a way, the third and most complex chapter on the cost of superheroics, a pulp adventure tale of horror about how the lessons we learn about right and wrong as children can become warped and twisted when challenged by the realities of the adult world. Irredeemable is a story of a man who was the greatest and most beloved superhero of all time and how he became the world's greatest supervillain. So that just kind of sums it up right there.
So he forces a couple to have sex while he watched and made the woman wear a wig and ask to be saved. And then later, this woman begging to be saved, and I guess it ends with him asking her how she would look in a wig.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, Mark Waid is one twisted twist.
Yeah, okay. And that's what we talked about that. I think that was last episode. We talked about he was quitting. You know, these series were going to end. You can kind of get the idea. He's been swimming in this dark nastiness for quite a while. That would weigh on anybody. And he's like, and he said all stories are autobiographical. No, you know what I'm talking about.
Autobiographical.
That's the word I'm looking for. It's too early for those big words, I think. but stuff happened with DC, and then he did this book. He's such a big Superman fan. This is obviously, you know, the Silver Age Superman gone bad. I mean, there's the parallels in it, and especially in the first trade. You can see, you know, he worked at a radio station instead of a TV station or a newspaper, and, you know, and all the stuff is there, and that's exactly what this has been. And he's exercised his bad side in this comic book, and yeah, it's really gripping stuff. Every time, you know, you read it, you start a new issue, you think you've seen everything, and then something else comes out. I still have number 8 I haven't read yet, which I flipped through it. It looks pretty bad, too. So, but anyway, how bad can he write this character? That's what you, the whole time you're writing this, reading this, that's what you're thinking. But anyway,
yeah, that's my good side.
Yes, definitely. No one is safe.
Alrighty. Okay, my third choice is going to go... I'm going to Marvel. I'm picking Doctor Doom.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Good classic one.
A good classic one from way back. I always find any Fantastic Four stories always made better by the inclusion of Doctor Doom.
He is a good one. Absolutely.
Well, I don't know that I have a favorite storyline for him, but I just like his whole bearing. I like that he's got this country that he rules. I like that the people in the country sort of look upon him as a benevolent dictator, depending on who's writing the book. And I like that he's regal. And I go back and forth. Like, sometimes I like the idea that he's kind of this noble, misunderstood character. And then other times I like the opinion that he's pretty petty and jealous and only puts on this regal facade because that's what he does. But I can go back and forth. If it's a good story, I'm fine with however he's portrayed. Like he's always good for a good read. I like him as a thinker and a planner, and I figure he should always be like one or two steps ahead of the Fantastic Four. Even when they beat him, I figure he's always got like another plan cooking around in that little faceplate of his and stuff. So.
Yeah.
I know you're a huge Byrne fan, and there was that single issue during Byrne's run on Fantastic Four when the four were not in it, where it was a Doctor Doom issue, where it focusing on him running Latveria.
I bet that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he has shown he's the benevolent dictator, and you know he will. In that issue, they introduce Christos, his adoptive son sort of character, they show what a petty guy Doom is, and how he's so self centered that he, like you said, you know, even in defeat, he still feels like he won. Even though he's, you know, clearly got his tail between his legs. I want to know. Actually, if I were to do a list of like my top 25 single issue comics, that would be in there.
So, yeah, it's a good one. It is a good, like, and he's a character that bears, like, that can take multiple interpretations. Like, you've got Wade looking at him, and Wade kind of played up the sorcery aspect of him, and that.
Right.
And Wade just sees him as a really cruel, wicked creature with like no redeeming qualities at all. And the stories work. And Byrne and Lee and Kirby kind of see him as a little more misunderstood or noble or whatever. And those stories work too. Like it's good because he's got like a good grounding in he's got the history with Reed and you know, like that rivalry is gonna, well, it's a one-sided rivalry, but you know that that's gonna be like, that's the thing that keeps pushing them on. So I like it.
Yeah. Probably one of the most memory I have of Dr. Doom would be in the original Secret Wars series.
Yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite Doom stories, I would say. So
good choice. Yeah, I don't know how he's being portrayed in Fantastic Four right now. Like, I know he's appearing in.
Well, he was in at FF. Yeah, I read the first like six or seven issues of that, and I guess something happened where he'd lost most of his mental capacity, and they used Christoph as a backup and to restore it, and so on and so forth. It was kind of funky.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll have to read those stories before I can make a judgment, but I'm not sure that I like the idea of him hanging out with the Fantastic Four. And
well, there was a reason for it. In fact,
they formed some sort of temporary alliance, I think. But
they had to find some way to. They figured he was the best guy to go to defeat Reed Richards because they were going up against a team of Reed Richards.
Oh, that's right.
From an alternate universes.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. That book was really good. It started out good, and it just went wonky, and I stopped reading it.
And then his creation, Stan Lee went back to his trope of, you know, the villain blames the hero for his being a villain.
right.
In the Lex Luthor losing his hair vein, you know, that kind of
thing. Yeah, that's pretty much it. The one thing I always thought was real interesting was the sorcery part of it in his background about, you know, trying to learn all that stuff to get his mother out of hell, or, you know, I don't know if that's been changed or not, but I've always liked that
Well, that's what I was going to say is, I mean, they originally said that, you know, he hated Reed Richards for destroying his face, but it actually was a deeper thing. He was actually in the process of trying to save his mom, mm-hmm. I think, was the somebody retroed that.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good choice.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right, well, so I might as well go old school Marvel then as well with Loki.
Ah, that's a good one, yeah.
I am actually not a fan of Thor. I don't read Thor. I've never really read Thor on a regular basis, even during the Simonson run.
Me either. But,
whenever this character appears, it's always fun. Mm-hmm. He's a fun bad guy.
The Avengers were formed.
Yes, he was the one who manipulated the Hulk. He's the one who's going to be in the new Avengers movie, in fact.
Yeah, I thought that was a good way to do it, too.
Yep. And I actually became a fan of this character during the X-Men Alpha Flight.
Oh, yeah, that was a great crossover.
You know, he's a thinker like Dr. Doom or Dr. Octopus. He knows he's not a fighter. You know, he's a lover, not a fighter. and I think they're even portraying him in the current Journey into Mystery is, you know, he realizes that's his gift. He's a manipulator. He's a talker. And they even did it in the Thor movie where, you know, he manipulated Thor into screwing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took over Asgard. He's just I like the supervillains that kind of talk their way through it. And they always seem to do that whenever he appears in a Marvel book that I like. And then you mentioned him earlier. Neil Gaiman used him in the Sandman book, and he was also he was just a talker. He talked his way out of getting his ass sent back to hell. He said, "Oh look, you invited me in as a guest, so you have to protect me." And Morpheus is like, "Okay, you're right. I'll protect you. Go away." And again, just a great use of the character. And maybe if I were to read my old Norse mythology, I would see that. They didn't do anything new with him, but that is one of my top five villains.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Huh. All right. Yeah, I don't read much other than, like his Avengers, mm-hmm. the beginning of him forming the Avengers. I don't know that I've read a whole lot of Loki.
You did read the Asgard Wars though, right? With the X-Men and New Mutants.
Oh, that was a great series.
Those I did.
Good thing, yeah.
And again, he didn't fight. He just manipulated the whole situation and got everyone else to do all the fighting for him.
Okay, this is my cheat a little bit. This is actually a character that was first seen in a TV show, but is now only seen in comic books. So.
Oh, you're stealing mine. I know you are.
Are you? Hey, oh.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, this is one of my favorite science fiction shows ever.
Oh, maybe you're not. Okay.
No. And in fact, my first dog that we got is named after a character in this from the show.
No, you're not. Okay.
Yeah. This is from Farscape, the character Scorpius. I would have to say, in my eyes, Scorpius, and I'll give a little background on him, but Scorpius is one of I think he's even a greater on-screen villain than even Darth Vader, because there is no redeeming qualities in this character whatsoever. Anybody that doesn't, well, it's, if you haven't watched, ever watched Farscape before, he's half, he's a product of a, spoils of war, I guess you could say. He's a half breed of two different races, which one race, the Skarrans, or excuse me, Sabaeans, have a weakness to heat, and the Skarrans, one of the things they do is they produce intense heat, so he has to wear a suit that keeps him cool, keep from dying, so that kind of gives him a mean disposition anyway. But he has done all kinds of things to one of the main characters, John Crichton. He put a chip in his head to get information that he wanted that was actually a neuro clone of his personality that would pop up and cause all kinds of havoc. And they even It's just without seeing the TV show, it's kind of hard to describe him. But I was trying to get wormhole technology, and there was an episode where when he gets a hold of Crichton, he puts him in I forget what the name of the chair was. He puts him in his torture device, basically. Tortures him through the whole episode, and the stuff that this character has done is it's just wild. But this character, the actor Wayne Pygram that plays him, it's just something. It's just really great stuff. So that's my top four. It's one of my favorite villains of any TV show, I would have to say. But, you know, like I said, it's somewhat of a cheat since they've had made comics of him. He actually gave him his own series, as a matter of fact, a while back. I don't know if it's still in production, but Boom puts out all kinds of Farscape comics written by the original creator, Rodney S. O'Bannon. So, a truly evil character.
Huh. Completely unfamiliar with him.
Yes, here. Let me send you a little link here. You can see what the guy looks like. He's just scary as hell.
My kind of geek friends that I used to work with and stuff talk about Farscape being a great show, and I felt like I had to like start at the beginning. So maybe I still can.
If you, it's on Netflix. The whole series. I actually have the entire series on DVD. There's still some, because it was in the middle of one of the seasons when we moved here, so I got all screwed up on it, so I haven't seen like the last fourth or fifth season, I think. But yeah, I love that series. That and Firefly were probably the best science fiction series ever. I mean, you know, with of course Star Trek being up there, but you know what I'm saying. So yeah, he's probably one of the best villains ever on TV, I think, in my opinion. So it's good stuff. But you just look at him, you can tell and the actor that plays that, it's just great. So anyway.
Well, I just added Farscape to my my instant queue, so
yeah.
Give it a shot.
Excellent.
And that's one of the reasons I like that so much is that's one of those, in the same way with comics, that's why I like Walking Dead so much. You have absolutely no idea what the hell's going to happen from one minute to the next in that show. And that's one of the reasons why I always like that. So, but anyway, continue.
Alrighty. I am going to go for my fourth pick. I'm going to go with The Brain from Doom Patrol.
Ah, yeah, that's a good one.
Shocking.
I know, but he's awesome. I mean, he appeared really early in the Doom Patrol's run, so they had their first six issues.
Totally different.
Totally different Doom Patrol. Their first 6 issues of My Greatest Adventure, and then they got their own book, and The Brain and The Brotherhood of Evil was the first group that they went up against. And he's like a criminal mastermind who is nothing more than a brain in a jar, mm-hmm. With like a big giant gorilla as a butler, sort of, you know, Monsieur, the giant super ape that does his bidding. But he's awesome. Like in that Doom Patrol run, from his first appearance then, like from the beginning of Doom Patrol till the end, the Brotherhood of Evil continues to pop up, and it's like an ongoing story that just kind of keeps building with each appearance. And he's pretty cool. He's like, he's got his little blippity bloop brain jar, and
that was a good Teen Titans villain too. I remember them.
That was my first exposure to the Titans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Though I tell you, the way they portrayed those two in the Outsider series there towards the end was not very pleasant. I don't know if you heard about that.
Outsider? I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, they kind of portrayed that they kind of had a love affair.
That's a Morrison thing, right?
Yeah, that came
was from, that a Morrison?
Oh, yeah, that okay. came from
I didn't know that.
A Morrison Doom Patrol thing. But I'm okay with that, because, I mean, really, you know.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
Well, it's weird, but...
It's an interesting twist. I will give it that. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I love the brain. Because, I mean, he's French, and he's...
Well, yeah. The French are inherently evil anyway.
Totally.
Unless you're a listener of this show and you're French, then you're
pretty... Yeah, then you're okay, you know.
You're the exception.
Yes.
And the cool thing is his brain jar looks like he's built it to look like a little skull, right?
Yeah. So
he's got his little pink brain blooping around in the fluids there, and then the voice box and stuff looks like a little skull. It's great design sense on the brain there. Mm-hmm.
Did he ever get an origin, like who he was before he became an entombed brain? I mean, it's not necessary. I'm just curious.
I was trying to think. And certainly not during the Doom Patrol run, I don't think.
I'm looking on the Wikipedia entry. It doesn't really have anything. He was just a scientist who performed experiments on animals to raise their intelligence. One of these was the Cashew Gorilla, which would be Monster Mala later on. Blah, blah, blah. He was a colleague to Calder. According to this, Niles Calder grew jealous of his work and arranged for the scientist to get caught in an explosion which destroyed the scientist's body. The brain survived, which Calder planned on putting into a robotic body. Mala rescued the scientist, taking his brain and transferring it to a computer network that kept it functioning. And then Calder would later engineer another accident, causing the race car driver Close Steel to crash his car. And then Calder put Steel's brain in the artificial body originally meant for him.
Now that's what it says. Yeah, like Vertigo, Doom Patrol-y stuff, which I haven't all read yet.
But. Yeah, but that, you know, that's Wikipedia, so that depends on who puts it in there. So.
Well, yeah, but still.
Great. I mean, it's on the internet, so it must be true.
It has to be true, yes.
So, anyway.
And actually, in the Wikipedia listing for the brain, they have the page where the brain and Monsieur Mala confess their love for each other.
Yes. Yeah, it's got the little picture. He's cradling the brain canister at the same time with a pistol in his hand. So
yes.
Very nice. First appearance, Doom Patrol number 86, May 1964.
Yes.
Very nice.
Okay, well, here's the one I thought you were going to steal from me.
Okay.
It's about first appearing on TV and then making a way to comics.
Oh, okay.
And given your love for all things Bat, I'm with Harley Quinn.
Oh, I don't. Never really cared for that character.
Oh, you're killing me. Harley Quinn rocks.
Yeah, it is a good character, but I don't know. But yeah, that was a animated series, and they put her in continuity about the time that the No Man's Land storyline was going on. As a matter of fact, Kevin Smith's first child is named Harley Quinn Smith. A little trivia there.
Hopefully he doesn't give her a mallet.
Yeah, she's currently in Suicide Squad. They redid her origin over there in the new Suicide Squad book. She was essentially the Joker's sidekick in the animated series. Mm-hmm. She was a crazy psychiatrist, a doctor actually, who worked at Arkham Asylum, who fell in love with the Joker and decided to take on his clown motif. But she went for the Harlequin look, and of course,
it's actually a well-designed character, really.
Oh, it's great! It's great. Her real name is Harlene Quinzel. So, as with all things comic book, they figured out a way to make that into Harley Quinn. She also had a subtle, somewhat questionable friendship with Poison Ivy, which people always read more into it than their. Really was. They were just a couple of gal pals who like to, you know, blow shit up.
I don't know about that. I've read some stuff that made me wonder, but, you know, you're probably right.
Well, yeah. You know, and I, wow, looks like she even did some time with the Birds of Prey for a little while, but she even had her own series for some time, which I never read a single solitary issue of, but I always thought she's a really good supporting character. I don't think she's a lead character.
I think I have the first issue still.
But again, yeah, she made the transition, like you said, from cartoon to the regular DC universe pretty seamlessly, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, popular enough that they're using her in Suicide Squad, bringing them to Gotham. She's confronting right now, just so you know, the whole taking the face off of Joker thing.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
She is she's pissed, just so you know.
Yeah.
Her pudding has no face now.
That's gotta be a problem.
Yes, it would be. I'm still kind of questioning that, why they did that. I think it was, well, I don't know. They've used Joker so much, maybe that's their way of getting away from it, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, I mean, they're portraying him as dead, at least in Suicide Squad, so for the sake of the story.
Yeah.
But just a great character, always fun. She's good for a laugh. In the cartoon, oh my God, whenever she appeared, it was, you know, comedy abounded. And in the comic book universe set for the cartoon, she was also, again, a great comic character, good for a laugh. No matter who she was teamed up with, whether it was the Joker or Poison Ivy or Batman. There's a great episode where Batman has to take her along.
Oh, that's right. I remember that one.
Classic stuff.
Great cartoon.
Yep. So I know I focus more on the cartoon version of this character, but...
Well, I mean, that's where it started, so there's nothing wrong with that.
She made the cut over to DC Universe pretty seamlessly.
That's not the – I was just thinking that's not the only character that was like that has been done that. The character Firestar from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends was brought into the Marvel Universe at one point too.
Yes, she was. It was a big deal. It was Uncanny X-Men number 200, I think.
Yeah, I remember. I had that at one time. Good stuff.
And it's drawn by never mind. So anyhow, that is my only my only top five female pick. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, I should have more females in my list, but I don't. I don't have any actually. Now that I look.
Wow.
What a pig.
Yeah, I know. I am. Because we all know women are more evil than men by nature. So.
Oh yeah.
No, just kidding.
All
right. Send hate mail to. No, just kidding.
Well, there's more. There's 51% of the pop. Never mind. Sorry.
No. All right. Who's next? That'll be me.
You.
Okay, this is going to be a big surprise, I'm sure. I think one of the most well-designed characters, I think, to ever hit the Batman universe would be Bane, soon to be in the next Batman movie. This character was actually a child that was born in prison and was forced to serve out the life sentence of his father that had died in this country, Santa Prisca. And according to this Wikipedia thing, it says Bane was originally intended as a dark mirror of the highly disciplined and multi-skilled pulp hero Doc Savage, which I never heard that before, but that's pretty cool. But anyway, he was born in this prison called Penedura. His father had been a revolutionary and escaped Santa Prisca's court system. The corrupt government, however, decreed that his young son would serve out the man's life sentence, and thus Bane's childhood and early adult life are spent in the amoral penitentiary environment. In prison, his natural abilities allowed him to develop extraordinary skills within the prison walls. Yada, yada, yada. And he goes in eventually and, you know, breaks Bruce Wayne's back. I'm sure you remember that from the 90s. It's a great, storyline, and he ends up, you know, Bruce Wayne comes back and takes him out later on. And probably one of the best things he was in was that Secret Six run around in September of 2008.
Yes, very good.
Because he had actually died at one point in, but was brought back after Infinite Crisis. During Infinite Crisis, he had actually passed away because they've discovered that the character Kingsnake was actually his real father.
Was he a Superboy Punch retro thing?
Yeah, they never explained. He just all of a sudden showed up in one of the issues. He was like on the cover of Infinite Crisis number 7. And they never did explain. You know, he was just like back. But he had actually died I think it was in Gotham Knights. But yeah, they even did a storyline that at one point there was evidence to suggest that maybe Thomas Wayne was his father. Remember that playing out, which that was a really dumb storyline. This is one of Chuck Dixon's things. But there was they actually had, you know, I can't remember the name of it. I think it was Vengeance of Bane or something like that. But they did like a one-shot, and it told his whole entire history right before that whole thing started. And I think that comic's worth like 20, 30 bucks. I still have it sitting around here. It's probably the one I got that's worth the most. First printing and the whole bit. But yeah, a lot of the people that his entourage, which they've never really shown them since then, came from that prison along with him.
His origin sounds like Freddy Krueger. When you were talking about how he was raised in prison, I kept thinking Freddy Krueger, the bastard son of a thousand maniacs.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's how, I mean, they played the whole thing entirely out in this comic. And, he taught himself he built up his body in the prison gym, learned to fight, you know, just because he was a kid, didn't keep some of those criminals from getting after him, and it showed him having to kill to survive, and he learned, you know, he'd done enough stuff at one point that he, you know, he was in solitary, and he would learn by reading, and they used him in experiments for venom, and that's where he got the venom from, and that made him, you know, huge. And then the Vengeance of Bane storyline later on, that very same doctor encounters Bane again. And but yeah, anyway, so they had him finally get off of that in Secret Six, and then he got back on it again because that's like it's a very addictive drug. In fact, they even did a storyline where Batman used that at one point in the Dark Legends of the Dark Knight. It was called Venom was the name of the storyline. Very good stuff. I think they even traded that. But anyway, yeah, this is some good stuff. And then, you know, after that, they did stuff, and it was kind of silly. But yeah, it's one of my favorite villains because the storyline behind it, and they don't talk about that as much now, but they might actually do that in the new movie. I'm hoping they do, because he's probably one of the most well-thought-out characters that's hit comics in a while, I think. But yeah, it's good stuff. Bane.
Bane. Good choice.
Thank y'all.
Yes. And they have not got him in the new 52 yet, have they?
I have not seen him, no.
Yeah. Like they won't with him being in the movie.
Well, I was going to say, yeah.
Well, yeah, and they've been – I mean, they even had him in the cartoon twice. Well, actually, they had him in – the first Batman animated series, the new Batman Adventures, and another version of him in that the Batman cartoon that they had for a while.
He was in Brave and the Bold too.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. He was in Young Justice. I'd forgotten about that.
That's right. He was in an early episode of Young Justice. You're right.
And he was also in that horrible movie Batman and Robin, but that we won't count that. But yes, he will be. Tom Hardy is playing him, which is a perfect choice because Tom Hardy is a excellent actor.
Good stuff.
Hopefully, they fix the voice problem. So.
Yeah. Yes.
Alrighty, I am going with for my last choice, Emerald Empress from The Fatal Five.
Oh, that's a good one.
You son of a bitch!
Oh!
Was that going to be yours?
Sort well, we'll wait.
I was gonna go with the.
You got time? Start scrambling.
That's right. I'll talk long. I was going to go with the whole Fatal Five, but then.
Oh.
I
just,
I'm going with the Emerald Empress, just plain old Empress. I think she is great.
I think Caleb got shot. Okay. No, go ahead. Go ahead. All right.
I'm going with when Levitt's brought her back in the Baxter run there with Legion. I want to say the early 20s, like 21, 22. She came back and she started rebuilding, the Fatal Five, and he tied the story into the current ongoing story at the time, which was the mystery of who Sensor Girl actually was. And he did some great things tying those two characters together, but Levitz did what he does really well, is he took a character that didn't have a whole lot of defining characteristics, and he just built her up, and he made her like super evil and really wicked powerful, and it was just a great story. And then her last story, her final story in the Baxter run, where we kind of see that she's become possessed by the Eye, and she's tired of the whole thing, and He gives her a final send-off with a confrontation between Sensor Girl and Emerald Empress. It's really good stuff. And
I had totally forgotten about that till that new annual came out.
Yeah. No, I always like a sexy villain, and she is one sexy villain.
Well, I have to admit.
Yeah, I like that version in the annual. That was really
That was a great book.
I liked how they actually made the Eye is the you know, the villain. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Good choice. Damn good choice, in fact. Jeez.
All right.
Fine. I got to go alternate then, because I was going to do Fatal Five as my last choice. But, I just always like the idea that five characters could take on the whole frickin' Legion.
Well, they are the worst of the worst. I mean, you know.
They were. Okay, I'll go alternate. I'm going to go Pere Degaton.
Oh, good choice. That is a good one.
Another mad scientist type, though this guy is kind of a douche. he uses somebody else's technology. He uses this... lab assistant who with delusions of grandeur, but actually follows through on them and steals this time machine from his boss and goes back and starts. Every time he appears, he goes back and he manipulates time, and he's kind of becomes like a Hitler type character. He's a Justice Society villain. I should note that, by the way. First appeared, goodness gracious, 1947, All-Star Comics, 1947, He fought the Justice Society on and off, you know, probably half a dozen times at the most. But every time he fought him, he manipulate time. The Justice Society would have to go back, fix it. At the end of the story, he wouldn't remember that he did it. He'd be back to being the lowly lab assistant at the end of each story, and then something would trigger it, and he'd start the whole process over. But he was the reason for the founding of one of my favorite series from the 1980s, All-Star Squadron.
Ah.
He was the big bad for their first storyline, caused them all to come together to help save the Justice Society, and all these B heroes, having to team up to save the A-list. Oh, you see, your dog agrees. Great villain.
Yeah, she's in the She anything she can see, she thinks is our yard. So somebody's out in the street, three blocks down the road, she sees it, she's got to bark. So that's what she was doing. She was looking out the front door. Anyway, continue.
No. He keeps coming back. He fought Infinity Incorporated.
Even I remember him. Justice Society when Johns and them were writing it. It was good.
Yeah. Oh, great stuff. I think there was I don't remember what book it was, but there was a bunch of time-traveling villains and he was one of them that teamed up.
I think it was Booster Gold.
Was it Booster? Yeah, you're right. It was Booster Gold.
With Despero and somebody else.
Yep.
Ultra Humanite. Cool. No, that was in JSA.
They kind of bounced around a bit because they were in Justice League a little bit when Meltzer was writing it, and then they showed up in JSA a little bit, and then I think mostly they were in Booster 2.
Yeah.
And of course, he was part of that that great Justice League All-Star Squadron crossover. He was the big bad from that as well, along with the villains of Earth 3.
Right.
So, he is my since Fatal Five was essentially taken off the table. I'm going with Pere Degaton.
Yeah, well, that's cool. That's a good one.
Plus, I love alternate history storylines.
I do too. I really like that stuff.
Badass stuff. And that was his shtick, was alternate history. Altering history, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was in Booster Gold a lot too. I remember that when I was still reading that.
Good choice for a villain for Booster, actually, I would say.
Yeah, that's a great choice. So.
Ta-da.
Excellent.
All right.
You guys have any alternates?
Well, I threw some ones in there, which I figured somebody would pick. There's Galactus, of course, the Anti-Monitor, and you'd think I picked the Joker, but the Joker's been overdone, I think. He's not quite. I mean, you go when we went to watch The Dark Knight, you know, and people were laughing at the stuff that the Joker was doing. That shit ain't funny. I'm sorry, excuse my language, but that Joker is not anything to laugh at. And I think it's been overdone so much that they think, the Joker is a joke, and that might be why they did what they did now to take him out, of DC. Joker isn't funny, any stretch of the word. But I've had Black Adam and Doomsday.
Right.
So that's what I had. How about you?
Mr. Fox, any alternates?
I did not have any alternates.
Whoa. Well, talk about confidence.
I know.
Well, I had Brother Blood as one of my alternates.
Yeah, I'd forgotten all about that.
I had Sandman from the Spider-Man comics. I always thought he was cool.
That is a cool one.
Though, sadly done in the Spider-Man 3 movie.
Oh, yeah. And that's another thing. Hey, if you're a movie producer, you don't need 14 villains in there. One is plenty if done right.
And then my last choice was another girl character only recently made into a villain. And that would be Dorothy Gale of The Wizard of Oz fame is now a badass mercenary in the Fables universe.
Oh, over. Really? Yes. Oh, man, I need to read more of that.
She got a taste for it when she took out the Wicked Witch and decided to start hiring herself out as a mercenary. Well, and she went up against
it. When was that revealed? Was that – because I missed one issue of Fables in the last couple of months.
It was actually in the Cinderella miniseries.
Oh, okay. That one I haven't read.
It was the second one, the more recent one.
Right.
Nice. Not the one with Sinbad, but the next one. And she, I guess I'm sure she'll be appearing in the new spinoff series as well.
Yeah.
And she did in the most recent. I don't know if it was the most recent issue of Fables. Yes, it was. They showed her. Being a bad guy in that as well, but like a panel or two that out of context meant nothing to anybody who hadn't read the Cinderella series, but a lot. And she's good. She's a nut job. She's a freaking nut job. And when she appears, it's like, oh my God, it's freaking Dorothy Gale.
Wow. Interesting.
Poor Dorothy.
Yeah. Right. She drags for Toto. My God, he's not a nice puppy. One of my alternates.
That's cool. That's a good choice. So, is that about it for everybody? Anything else to say?
So, no, I'm good.
Alrighty. I am good, too. So, I guess that's us signing off. Anyway, if you want to make... If you want to make any comments, suggestions, criticisms, you can email us at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com. You can talk to us on our Facebook page. Just do a little search in the searchy box, and we're there. Lots of activity in there, and I frequently post, much to everyone's chagrin, I'm sure, multiple news items off and on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on there. And people have nice conversations about them, some heated. But everybody plays nice. there's always the much talked about but never used forum still out there. What else? What else we got? Comments on the actual webpage. You can comment on iTunes. Yeah, that's about it there. So there's plenty of ways to contact us. Anyway, that's it for this week. We will see you then.